Yeah? Like skewers. You could use to brush things out.
Yud Ches Adar, Monday the 9th of March, Rabbi Moshe Levi, from Purim to Pesach in 70.
Intriguing.
Morning. They tell a story. A few Jews sitting around the table. And one of them looks at his friends and he says, I have to tell you about my rabbi. My rabbi is a goyim. I woke him home from shul Friday night. I say, Rabbi, you ready for tomorrow's sermon? Tomorrow's speech? And he says, I have no idea what I'm going to speak about. He gets up Shabbat morning and he's unbelievable. Everyone is in awe. Such a Talmud Chacham. The next Jew says, that's nothing. My rabbi, I woke him to shul Shabbat morning. I ask him, Rabbi, do you know what you're going to speak about? He says, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I don't know what I'm going to speak about. And within an hour and a half, he gets up and he gives the most fascinating, unbelievable speech. And the third Jew says, that's nothing. My rabbi gets up Shabbat morning, and while he's speaking, he has no idea what he's speaking. I'm getting up here. I'm not really sure what I'm speaking about, in the sense that I haven't seen anyone say this. Some thoughts running around my head, and feel free to agree, disagree. Whenever you tell Jews, feel free to disagree, they make sure to pay attention. So, they called me up about 6-7 weeks ago, and they said, Rabbi, we want you from Haberdashers Boys School, we want you to speak by the assembly, it's Holocaust Memorial Week. It's been 70 years since the liberation of Auschwitz. This is the biggest assembly of the year. The head teacher is going to be there. Many non-Jews will be there, so it must be politically correct. And I said to them, is there any specific theme you're going with? They said, the righteous among the nation. I said, okay, so you want me to speak about the Holocaust, righteous among the nation, obviously a Jewish aspect, 70 years. How much time would you like me to speak for? They said, about 9 minutes. I said, okay. I got up there to speak and I said to them, I've been to Poland 13 times in the past 4.5 years. I can spend 9 hours or probably even 90 hours going through the different elements and aspects, what it was like in the ghetto, 1939, the atmosphere, 1941, 1944, 45, different countries, different places. Each ghetto had its own unique challenges. The death camps, the concentration camps, each one. But I said what I was really thinking about was the 70 years since the end of the Holocaust. And I said, where in Judaism do we see the number 70? So, we all know many ideas. There's 70 languages. Shivim Panima Torah, the 70 faces for the Torah. We just read in this past week's parasha, Shivim Shekel, Shekel HaKodesh. Machazit HaShekel, once again you see the number 70. I said to them, but I think the most prominent place we see this number 70 is the end of the first Beit HaMikdash. The temple is destroyed. The people feel distraught, dejected. Hashem has abandoned us. Millions were killed. And the most unbelievable edifice, the biggest tourist attraction in the world, has been destroyed. Hashem has forsaken us. There's no way we can recover. It'll take a lifetime. And it did. Yemeshin Atenu Bahem, Shivim Shana. How long is a lifetime? 70 years. Once again, the number 70. At the end of the 70 years, you have the story of Purim. And once again, you have a redemption, a Geula. In the story of Purim, if I was to ask you, who's the hero? Who's the hero? You would tell me Mordechai and Esther. Everyone loves Mordechai and Esther. Last Patsuk, Varatzu, the Rav Echad. He's beloved by almost everybody. They say he can never, ever, ever, especially with the Jews, have everybody 100%. Varatzu, the Rav Echad. He's the hero of the story, Mordechai. But if you go back to Persia 2,500 years ago, and you put yourself in the Jewish people, Mordechai was probably the most hated man amongst the Jewish people. For almost 900 years, the Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. There's no such thing as intermarriage. Everyone you know is a Jew. Everyone on your block is a Jew. Everyone who lives in all the surrounding towns is Jewish. And then, they're in Golos. And first they're in Babel, and then they're in Persia and Iraq. First in Iraq, and then in Persia and Paras. And the king gets up, the new king, and he says, everyone come to the party. Everyone says, what are we going to do? We got to go. Stands up this rabbi and says, nobody go. Not allowed to go. And they say, look, rabbi, you got to get with the times. When we lived in Eretz Yisrael, so you were in charge. We had the Sanhedrin, which was 70, once again, 70 people. 70 plus one. And we listened to you. You were in charge. The land was governed by the Sanhedrin, by the land, the law of the Torah. But now, you got to get with the times. We have to be normal. And Mordechai says, nobody go. And they said, rabbi, you're old school. Doesn't work like that anymore. And a few years later, Haman comes to power. And where's the avodah zarah around his neck? And he says, everyone bow down. And everyone bows down, except for one man. Now, just imagine the scene. Imagine if the Queen of England decided, everyone has to join the army. And one rabbi gets up, says, I'm not joining the army. And the Queen says, you don't join the army? Okay, I'm killing every last Jew. How crazy would we go at this rabbi? You fanatic, crazy extremist! You're getting us all killed, probably many other rabbis say, what are you doing? But Mordechai stood up for what he believed in. In the whole Chamisha Chum Shetara, you don't see the word Yehudi. Obviously you have Yehuda, but you don't have the word Yehudi. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, used to make them wear an armband with the mug in David, and the word Jude, Yehudi. Only person in the whole Tanakh, if I'm not mistaken, called a Yehudi. Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Abira. There was one Yehudi, Shmo Mordechai. His name was Mordechai. What does it mean to be a Yehudi? To stand up for what you believe in. And on Purim, once again, we see the number 70. We drink on Purim, Nechnas Yayin, Yatzah Sod. What's the gematria of the word Yayin? 70. What's the gematria of the word Sod? 70. Once again, we see on Purim, this number of 70, this number of redemption. I said to them by the assembly, you asked me to speak about the righteous among the nation. I've met a few righteous among the nation. And I thought about it. Let's be honest. I said to them, I won't be so politically correct even though you asked me to. If they were rounding up all the Chinese or all the Muslims or all the blacks or whatever denomination it was, and I knew that if I helped them, I would get killed. Would I do it? Would we do it? Some random stranger we don't know? Please, some water. You give them a cup of water, they kill you. Would you do it? I said, I thought about it for a long time, and I think I would. But then I thought about it some more, and I said, maybe I'd be willing to risk my life. But would I be willing to risk the life of my wife and kids? I really don't know. But these righteous among the nation, thousands gave their lives and thousands got the award of righteous among the nation. They risked their lives and the lives of their family to stand up for what they believe in, their ethics, their morals, their beliefs. Mordechai, Lahavdil, was this righteous among the nation. He didn't care what anybody else had to say. He stood up for what he believed in. And the Geula comes when you have Yehudi, when you have righteous among the nation. People standing up for what they believe in at the end of the 70 years. But the truth is, if you think about it, it started with 70. Where did it start with 70? How many people go down to Mitzrayim? Shivim Nafesh. You have Purim, the Purim story of redemption, of Geula, of Yayin and Soid. 70. And you have Pesach, and it all started with 70. Shivim Nafesh. Let's say Shivim Nefashot. We were one Jewish people. Esther says, Lech Kenoset Kol HaYehudim. Get all the Yehudim. Those that are proud of who they are. Shoshanat Yaakov Tzala V'Samecha. They were so proud. They were euphoric. When? Verotam Yachad, when they all were together, Tchelet Mordechai. He was proud of who he was. He's wearing the Tchelet on his tzitzit. He wasn't embarrassed. He was a Yehudi, proud of who he was. Because he knew he had Hashem with him. The word Yehudi is Hashem's name. You have the Yud and the Hey and the Vav. And instead of the last Hey, you take out the little bottom part of the Hey, you put it next to the Tam. And instead of Yud Kei Vav Kei, you have Yehudi. Got that? When you're a Yehudi, when you're proud of who you are and what you're all about, your ethics, your morals, then you have Hashem with you. The Gemara tells a story about Choni Amado. He sees somebody planting a carob tree. And he says, what are you doing? You know how long it takes a carob tree to grow? And the man says, how many years? 70 years. Once again, the number 70. A whole new rebirth, a new generation. He says, what's the point? He says, what do you mean? My great-grandfather planted it for me, and I'm going to do it for my great-grandkids, my grandkids. But you'll never see it. Doesn't matter. I know someone from Manchester. They're building a new shul, and I said to him, how's the fundraising going? He said, it's not so easy. I said, what's your pitch? What's your sales tactic? And he says, I go to people and I say, who built our shuls? 80, 100, 120 years ago? We don't know. But because they had the foresight to build those shuls, we have somewhere to go. Building a new shul might not be for us as much as it is for our grandkids and great-grandkids. Choni Amado, we all know, is put to sleep. 70 years! And he wakes up and it's a new generation. It's the next generation. We want to get ready for the Geula. 7 years have passed since the last Korban. And we were destroyed and dejected and we thought we can never recover. It's impossible. So many people said, I thought there was no way. I heard from Rabbi Reisman, he said he was playing ball. In the yard, public school yard in America, playing basketball. And somebody comes to him and says, you're in yeshiva? He's wearing the kippah. He says, yeah. What are you learning? He looks at the guy like, what are you asking? He says, I'm learning Baba Basra. So the guy says, Cheskes Avatim? He almost falls off his chair. He says, yeah. And the man starts quoting, not just Gemara, not just Rashi, Tosfos and Rishonim Baal Peh. And he looks and he says, the man wasn't wearing a kapel, didn't look. He said, I survived the Shoah. I was in yeshiva before the war. I was so down and out. I thought there's no way from Jews or Judaism would survive, so I figured, what's the point? If I would have known, he said, that there would be 20, 30 years later yeshivas and so much a revival of Torah, I never would have thrown it all away. But what happened? People say, there's no way. Baruch Hashem, it's taken 70 years, but you look around, and the amount of Torah being learned collectively, we might not have the gedolim we had in previous generations, but the amount of Torah collectively being learned, it's unparalleled. Maybe. After the times of Rabbi Akiva, you had 24,000. You go to the Mir Yeshiva, you go to Lakewood, and you go, it's unbelievable. Okay? It's thousands and thousands. And Hashem says, 70 years have passed. Now's the time. We go from Purim 70, we get ready for Pesach 70. Minisan nigalnu, and Nisan we were redeemed, and Nisan atidin nigael. So what do? We're ready for the redemption, for the Geula. 7 years have passed. Very nice, Rabbi, you have all these numbers and gematrias. What are we supposed to do? We're ready, the time's ready, the year's ready. There's a story with the Chafetz Chaim. He was quite elderly. It was a year or two before he passed away. And he said to his grandchildren, he said, I need to go have a meeting with, there was a few other gedolim. They didn't want him to travel, they didn't think he could handle it. They said, okay, Zaidi, don't worry, you can't go by yourself. No, 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 I'm going, well, we'll wait till tomorrow. No, we have to go now. They push him off, there's no trains, we'll go tomorrow. The next day, they said, the train's not running, there's a problem. They didn't want him to go. The next day he woke up and he said, the time has passed. It seems like there's certain times where there's more opportunity, where there's something in Shamayim that if you take advantage of that time, you can bring Mashiach. You can always bring it, obviously, Ani Mamin. But there's certain times that are more opportunistic. Nisan, it's that time. 70 years is that time. So what do? So we look at the template. We look at the blueprint for redemption, for Geula, Yitziat Mitzrayim. And we have Leil HaSeder. Leil HaSeder, we sit around and we commemorate what happened in Mitzrayim. And many people, they're very traditional. I have become a lot of people. People tell me this. I don't believe in God, but I believe in tradition. So I'll have the Seder, and I'll go to Shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and I'll even fast Yom Kippur. Because it's tradition. That's not why we do it. Dessler explains, we all know what happens. There's certain kohod, there's certain powers in the year that they're there, not just because Hashem created the world and it was a rebirth and a renewal 5,775 years ago. Rosh Hashanah is a time, the koach is there, we just need to tap into it. Purim's a time of hidden miracles, Pesach's a time of redemption. They give the example, a guy gets on a train, and he's exhausted, he's working hard, he's going to Paris, and he falls asleep before they even leave. They go all the way to Paris, everyone gets out, and he's still out cold. All the people from Paris get on, they drive, go back to London. 7.5 hours later, he wakes up. He says, well, what is this? We didn't go anywhere. Obviously, he went. What was the problem? He slept through it. Says Reb Dessler, most people sleep through it. Most people go through life and they don't tap into the kochot, into the powers that are there by each Yom Tov, by each holiday. Pesach's a time for redemption. It's not just tradition that we have the Seder. So you think, what is the Seder? The Seder, we eat the matzah to commemorate that we left Mitzrayim. We tell the stories and the miracles. So when was the first Seder? You would assume the first Seder was the year 2449, the year after they left Mitzrayim. Happy anniversary! We discussed the miracles that happened. But we all know that's not true. When was the first Leil HaSeder? In Egypt, in Mitzrayim. Al Matzah Umrorim Yocheluhu with the Korban Pesach. I have some friends, they tell me, you know, I was in Israel when I saw the Sephardi matzah, it's like lafa. Oh, I don't understand. Oh, they're not machmir. I said, one second. When they were in Egypt, you ever went to Sammy's, you saw them make a lafa, it takes them like 20 seconds. Yeah, when they were in Mitzrayim, the dough didn't rise. It doesn't mean they had the cardboard that we eat. Right? They had the hummus, salat chips, korban pesach in the lafa, and that was it. That was korban pesach. In the lafa, shawarma in the lafa. Or lamb. But why in Mitzrayim? How can you commemorate the anniversary before the anniversary? Why are they having the Seder in Egypt? Makes no sense. So the rabbis tell us something very important for life. Hashem says, you're about to go out, you're about to be free. Before you're even free, you need to have a picture of what it means to be free. There's a professor in Harvard. He has a theory called the Pythagorean theory, expectation theory. He went into a bunch of different schools and he called each kid out of class, and they were all more or less the same level, and he randomly picked 5 names off the list. And he says to the teacher, these 5 are brilliant. Really, really special kids. And he did this in many different schools, and he comes back at the end of the year, and he looks, and in math, those 5 students, they had the best grades. So maybe it's just math. He looks, science, history, English, they were the best 5 kids in the class. They weren't any more clever or any better than anybody else when he actually interviewed them. He went to the next school, and the next school, and the same thing over and over and over. When the teacher expects of the child, when the child expects of himself, they can do well. Because they have a vision of what they want to be. If a teacher comes to a kid and says, they have in this country expected grades, and the teacher says, we expect you to get a C. Is there any way that kid's going to get an A? Highly unlikely. Because the kid doesn't even bother trying. He knows the best he can do. The teacher said, you're a C student. Now, it could be if a kid's told to get an A, he still might get a C. But he's much more likely to get an A. I had a teacher come to me in one of the schools and says, oh, what's your name? I said, Moshe Levy. He said, oh, you're the one that all these guys, you know, the ones that are on the streets, you're the one that they all really connect to and love. I said, which kids? He said, you know, the yucks. I said, I'm from America. I don't, what's a yuck? Like, you know, a yuck. I said, I don't know. What's it? He says, you know, the kids that are bums, they're smoking and this, that. And I looked at him, I said, they're yucks if you call them yucks. If that's how you classify them and that's what you tell them they are, then that's what they'll be. Pythagorean theory, expectation theory, this is what you need to be. That's what you will become. Hashem says you want to be free before you even leave Mitzrayim. Have a vision of what it means to be free. You sit around the table and you say, I'm free, I'm going to spend my time learning. When I'm free, I'm going to spend my time doing chesed. When I'm free and I have money, I'm going to give tzedakah. Have a vision of what you want to be. You need to have a goal, you need to have a dream. If you open a business and you go to the bank and you say, I want to borrow £1 million, the first thing they say is, where's the business plan? You can't succeed if you're just going to wing it. Hashem says, you want to be free? You got to have a dream. You got to have a business plan. I think it's very important for us in life. What is our vision? What is it that we want to be? What type of fathers and grandfathers and siblings and bosses? Spouses? What is it that we want to be? What is the ideal, and then how are we going to get there? And if you have a plan, then you can look back and you can say, it's going well, it's not going well, I'm superseding expectations. I'm not living up to expectations, why not? Was I dreaming too much? But you got to have the dream. The Panovich Rav went around trying to get money to buy the land. And this was right before Hitler Yimach Shemo was about to attack. And they said to him, are you crazy? You're dreaming. Why we're about? He says, I might be dreaming, but I'm not sleeping. So many people in life, they're sleeping. They're on the train. They're not tapping into the kochot. They don't have a vision of what they want to be and who they are. What their kochot are. What they're all about. So first and foremost, you want to bring the geula? You have to have a dream of what the geula is about. What am I going to do when Mashiach comes? How am I going to help bring Mashiach? And then once you have that vision, once you have that dream, matzah. What is matzah? So we all know, you ask any kid, oh, why do we eat matzah? Matzah, because the Jews were running out of Egypt. So first of all, like we just said, they ate matzah in Egypt. But more than that, when does Paro tell the Jews to get out? A little bit after midnight. When did the Jewish people leave? Etzem hayom hazeh. And the rabbis tell us, we don't want to sneak out in the middle of the night. Like thieves. It's not becoming of us. They had 6, 7, 8 hours to prepare. Like we said, lafa, even bread, takes an hour. Lafa takes 5, 7 minutes max. What's the matzah all about? So we all know, you look at matzah, what's the difference between matzah and bread? The only difference is time. It's the same ingredients. But the bread, we got plenty of time. The matzah, if you ever went to a matzah bakery, they're jumping around, they're running. Now, quickly, yalla, hurry up. They don't play any games. There's no time. Hashem says, eat the matzah. It's not about running out of Egypt, per se. It's about this resource. It's about doing it quickly. You have a vision of what you want to be, who you are, type of husband, type of son, type of father you want to be. Now, do it right now. Yalla, this second. Because if you take your time, won't happen. So often in life we get inspired. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do Daf Yomi, and I'm going to finish that, and I'm going to make sure, and I'm going to donate this. And then what happens? A few weeks or a few days or usually a few hours later? The matzah means this second, go, 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 run! Don't waste any time. You got a dream, and you got to make it happen. And you can't wait. Then it'll never happen. Chaim Shlomitz brings down Shaul HaMelech. He says, whoever can kill Goliath will marry my daughter. And David HaMelech gives him his daughter to marry. Now we all know the story. He gets upset at David, and David's running for his life, and he takes Palti ben Laish and says, you're now going to be married to my daughter. And the Gemara says, Palti ben Laish takes out a sword that first day That first night he's supposedly married, and he puts a sword in the bed and says, I'm not crossing this line. Says Reb Chaim Shulevitz, well, obviously he was a tzaddik, obviously he was a great guy, he knew what he was doing. Yeah, chill out, he's got to take a sword, put it in the bed, relax. Says Reb Chaim Shulevitz, no. Halti Ben Lajish understood, right now I know. Right now I'm keen, right now I have that inspiration. But in a week from now, or a month from now, or even a year from now, I'll start convincing myself. Look, David Melech's not here, and I can't go against the king, I'll be more Ibn Malchut. So I have, when the sword's there, right then, when you have the inspiration, take out the sword, I'm doing it this second. Right now. Take advantage. Don't wait. There's times in life that the opportunity's there. And I think 70 years, Nisan's upon us. You have from Purim to Pesach, Geula to Geula. Gemara says when there's two others, it's in the second one because you want Geula to Geula. One redemption to the next. The second Beit HaMikdash was built at the end of 70 years of exile after the Churban. It's been 70 years since our most recent Churban. So I'll just end with the story that I told them at the assembly. I heard the story. Unbelievable tour guide named Tzvi Sperber from J-Roots. We were sitting in a cattle car that was used to transport the Jews. We were about 60 people standing, and obviously we had no luggage or suitcases, and we felt squashed, and they used to put in 120, 150 sometimes. And he sat there and he told us a story. He said he was driving a couple years ago, Erev Yom Kippur, on the driving, and he was listening to the radio. And this man gets on the radio and he says, I was in the Kinder transport from Germany to England with some of my friends. And after being there for a few months, they told us, you're going to get to meet the king, King George VI, if I'm not mistaken. You're going to get to meet the king, and they were all very excited. They wore their best. And they're told to line up, and the king is driving through, waving. He said, I turned to tell my friend, what type of scam is this? I thought we get to meet the king, shake his hand, we just see him wave to us from a car. He said, when I turned to my right, my friend wasn't there. My friend was running after the king's car, and he starts banging on the boot. And everyone's looking like, what, are you crazy? This is back in the day, they didn't have 17 different cars and all the protection. They stop the car, the king stops the car, and he opens up the door. And they have a conversation for a minute. It says, then the king drives off, and my friend walks back. And the teachers are looking at him, oh, they want to kill him. The head teacher, he knows he's in big trouble. And everyone's like, are you crazy? And he's waiting for his punishment. A week goes by, 2 weeks go by. After 2 weeks, the head teacher calls him in. Calls in his friend, this guy says on the radio. And the head teacher says, do you know why I called you in? And he says, yes. He says, when you spoke to the king, what did you say to the king? He said, I told him, Your Highness, thank you so much for allowing me and my friends to come into your country on the Kinder transport. But I have to tell you, my parents are still in Germany. And the king asked me for their names and which town they were in. And that was it. And the head teacher looks at my friend, says the guy on the radio, and he says, the king sent you a present. And he opens the door. Standing there is this guy's parents. And the guy on the radio says, obviously with tears in his eyes, not a day goes by that I don't think, I had the opportunity, the king was there, and I didn't take advantage. My friend, he grew up with his parents, but I never saw my parents again. I had the opportunity to take advantage, and I didn't. There's times in life where we have that opportunity to take advantage. I didn't see anyone say this, but I think the 70 years, it's a number, it's a time of Geula. And Nisan is a double Geula. Mirtza Hashem will make sure that we're proud, we'll be that righteous among the nation. We'll be that Yehudi, proud of who we are, have Hashem with us. Have the vision of the type of Jew and the type of world that's going to be when Mashiach comes. Act on it now. Matzah, bezrizos, right away. And Be'ezat Hashem will be zocher to have the third Beit HaMikdash. Meher Abi Amin. Thank you.